This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is a throwback Thursday today. Thanks for joining us. We are celebrating 1980, the start of the Olympic Games in Lake Placid, New York. So we're going to have a few of the music from 1980 and a feel for those Olympic Games and a feel for those times throughout the show today. But I want to get a little more modern. At the beginning of the basketball season, well, let's go to June, right? When Zion Williamson was the number one overall pick by the New Orleans Pelicans. And then the Lakers and the Pelicans made the big trade that sent Anthony Davis over to the Lakers. And in return, Hall came into the Pelicans. There was a feeling that the Pelicans would be a fun team to watch. Don't know if, you know, a Western Conference power, but look, if you're watching them on a Tuesday night or a Thursday night on TNT or ESPN, they would be worth your attention. But then Zion was hurt, and he didn't play for a good portion of the season, and that sort of thought process disappeared. I am here to tell you it's back. The Pelicans are one of the most fun teams you can watch in the NBA. Listen, last night, the Lakers and the Nuggets, teams 1 and 2 in the Western Conference, played a thrilling overtime game. LeBron James had a triple-double. But I expect something like that when those two teams play. What the Pelicans are doing, their game against Portland the other night, Zion Williamson had 31 points in a victory over the Trailblazers and is starting to propel New Orleans into the bottom of the playoff picture. This kid has been absolutely amazing. In 9 games that he has played since coming back from the knee injury, he has scored over 20 points in 7 of those games, including what is now a season-high 31 against the Trailblazers. He has got power. He has got finesse. He has got superstar written all over him. This is a very fun basketball team to watch. Now, look, the Western Conference is stacked, and it's stacked pretty good. And I don't know if the Pelicans are a team that climbs up a little bit in the bottom of the standings, gets a 6 seed or maybe a 7 seed going into the postseason. But I do know this. If I'm the NBA, I would be very excited about any first-round matchup that the Pelicans are in. Anytime you can see new blood into the postseason, expose that new blood. We saw it when Giannis was really starting to blossom and then get into the postseason where the audience was a lot bigger and a lot more broad. That's what you're going to see with Zion. Yes, he played for Duke, and I get that, but his presence in the NBA has really been, so far, a sight to behold, and you should watch it.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM on a Throwback Thursday. 1980 is the music. The Olympics in Lake Placid is the anniversary, as they lit the torch for the Olympic Games of that year. And, of course, it finished out with a gold medal for the USA hockey team. 5 gold medals for Eric Heiden. With basketball season in full swing, it's time to get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline. If you sign up today, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. You've been hearing me talk about this. Get it on your first deposit, and you can start betting college and pro sports right away. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, and those wild proposition bets as well, like who's going to win the NBA MVP. Get the fastest market odds, updates, and payouts with BetOnline, our new sportsbook partners. Head over to the website today. You can use your mobile device to join. Use the promo code SBNation55. That's SBNation55. Receive your 50% welcome bonus. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. You know, going back to the conversation we were having about the Olympics, because it's Throwback Thursday, I think what I miss about the Cold War, and believe me, I was a kid, I was really kind of terrified of nuclear war, so I don't miss a lot of that. You know, when you don't have a grasp of the geopolitical landscape, you're only kind of going through your own imagination. But when you look at the Olympic Games now, who's our big rival? Who's the country we are fighting to beat? Because it means more than just Olympic competition. We don't have that anymore. Now, we may like the fact that we beat a country that's good at a particular sport. Like, didn't the United States win gold in curling?
Well, yeah.
At the last Olympic Games?
I think it's not. It's no longer like as broad as it was. Like we need to beat the Russians.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's now like it's individual sports have individual countries.
If Norway is really good at biathlon and the United States and a United States athlete wins biathlon, that's cool. But we don't have any sort of we have no country that we are saying our system is better than your system. Like we
are sports-wise or
yeah,
government?
Sports-wise. Government and sports. What made the 80 Olympic Games? Listen, if the United States had beaten Canada in the semifinals,
yeah,
right?
We wouldn't be talking about it.
That's different. It was the Soviets in 1980 that makes that story and that event so much grander.
Yeah.
Like, Canada is really good at hockey, right?
Well,
but if we had beaten them, we'd been like, we beat a really good country at hockey. It had to be the Soviets in 1980 to make this story one of the greatest sports moments of all time.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, like, today, in today's world, we have individual sports. Like, our greatest rival in hockey, Olympic hockey, will be Canada. Because they're, you know, it's made up of two professional teams, and they all play against each other. Some of these guys play on the same team with each other.
Yeah, I think have they done away with that?
I think so, but I think they're bringing it back.
Okay.
I thought they were bringing it back. I don't know if it's going to be in time for the next Olympics.
Well, a couple of years ago, I remember T.J. Oshie at the time. I think he was playing for St. Louis. Was the big hero?
Yes.
In 2014, something like that. I think that's when. Yeah, 2014. Yeah, because I remember going to a sports bar establishment to watch it in the afternoon, and I remember Oshie winning. I was like, yeah, I think at the time he was playing for St. Louis.
I will say this too. I know for a time our biggest rival in swimming, this is like the beginning of Michael Phelps, was Australia.
But that's different.
I know, but I mean that's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah, that's what it's come down to now. We don't have. I mean, I can't think of a country where we'd be like, oh, let's take it to them.
Look, you go back to the 80s. Go back to Carl Lewis. Go back to Edwin Moses. Go back to Mary Decker Slaney. Go back to anybody that participated in the 1984 Olympics. They were really angry there weren't Soviet athletes there.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't mad that there weren't East German athletes there or Czechoslovakian athletes because they boycotted too. They were mad that there wasn't any Soviet athletes to go up against. This was beyond the athletic competition. There was a geopolitical atmosphere that you couldn't write a better story than a bunch of college kids beating the mighty Soviets in hockey in 80. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how that turned out because we don't have that political rival anymore, that deep political, like there's no country we hate. Like we may hate terrorists, right? We do that, but we don't hate a country. Like we really hated the Soviets. Like we were kind of grew up in a time where they were evil, right? We looked at them and that was the evil empire. As Reagan got into office in 81, that's what he was driving home. They didn't allow freedom. Everybody there had no toilet paper, right? The government was oppressive. You grew up believing that they were bad people. So when you beat them in any athletic event, it felt good, but you couldn't see it because in the summer games, the United States boycotted Moscow and then they boycotted LA. And by the time 88 rolled around, there was a breakdown. There was a thawing of that Gorbachev and Reagan had that allowed that to sort of die down a bit. And we sort of saw each other in a different light. But, you know, back then in 80, it's like, those are the Russians. I mean, my God. Like we just don't like them because they have a hammer and a sickle attached to their flag. So to sell,
and
you know,
their entire country is cold 24 hours a day,
all
365
the
days a year.
Right, exactly. I mean, and so it's such a different sporting landscape now. And I think a lot of it too is obviously the nature of where politics stands. But I also think I don't think you can create that again. I mean, look, it wasn't just political, right? Why was the United States hockey team going up? Why was it such a big deal to beat the Soviets? It wasn't just because there was a Cold War going on. It was because the way they did their Olympic athletes was different than the way we did it, right? They got you at 4 years old. They put you in a camp. They recognized talent early. You played with the same people. You went through the Soviet system. You had no choice. You were going to play, right? There was no other way unless you wanted to work at the plant, right? In the government factory, you were going to be a hockey player. And the United States was like, no, if you grew up in Boston or Minnesota or wherever and you played hockey and you were decent enough, we have tryouts. We're going to take a look at you and we're going to throw a team together of kids.
Yeah, but it's basically how we look at China now.
Right,
like
right.
The Chinese gymnasts or Chinese divers. You hear the story all the time that, oh, this, you know, this diver's been a diver since she was 3 years old.
Yeah.
Like, how did they recognize that she was going to be a good diver at 3 years old?
Right.
Like, no, she was handpicked and she was groomed to be this.
And I also think there was, like, just from the sports aspect of it, I'm not diminishing the geopolitical times. Just from a sports aspect of it, you can go back to 1972. And the United States lost the basketball gold medal to the Soviets. And in that game, because it was so controversial, meaning that FIBA had gotten involved on a number of occasions to add time to the clock, every time the United States did something on the court to prevent the inbound pass and prevent the Soviets from scoring the game-winning bucket, they were replaying it based on something. And finally, the Soviets were able to score, and then they went game over. The United States actually went to the locker room and was told to come back, and they came back, and they ran the play again. And the Soviets won, and it was so controversial. Many of you know the story. The United States has never accepted the silver medal for that. The basketball players will never accept the silver medals. They're all in unison. Not one player from the 72 basketball team has ever accepted the silver medal. They're still locked in a vault in Switzerland. And they've got it in their wills that no one in their family will ever accept those silver medals. So from a sports standpoint, the United States basketball felt cheated. So there's that plus the Cold War. It leads to 40 years ago, pretty much a perfect storm, right? Of our system of sports, your system of sports, what you mean on the global stage, what we mean on the global stage, what we fight for in terms of freedom, what you fight for in terms of oppression, we're gonna have a hockey game. And because and when you throw in the aspect that the Soviets at the time had beaten the United States, 10-0 at the Garden before the Olympic Games, you throw that into this pot, it is one of the greatest sports stories we had in 100 years.
All right, I got a question for you.
Sure.
What hurt more, us losing the gold medal game in 1972 in basketball or them losing to us in hockey?
Great question. I watched a documentary that I really need to revisit where it was a 30 for 30, and it was the other side of the story of those players returning back to the Soviet Union and some of the scrutiny that they faced for losing that game. Because, you know, I can only imagine what they must have gone through. Like you not only lost a hockey game, you lost to the United States in the United States, and it put a mark on the Soviet dominance, right? The Soviet, you know, era of greatness of what the system that they were putting together. But I think the United States felt after the Munich games coming back that they had won that game. And so they won that game, which is why they don't accept the silver medal. Whereas the Soviets are like, we lost. Like, there was no controversy. We pulled our coach pulled our goaltender, Tretiak, way early. Tretiak was one of the greatest goaltenders in the game, in all the globe. And they pulled him without any giving a chance to him to collect himself to go, all right, listen, I've given up a couple of soft goals, but I'm not doing it again.
I would almost say maybe in the sports history.
Probably.
I mean, you can put him up there because he had like a scoreless streak of 8 years or something stupid.
Exactly. So, and it was the Red Army. I mean, it was like a whole bunch of things. That's 40 years ago. Is 40 years a long time? Sure it is. Is it long when you talk about the grand scheme of things? I don't know. It's not really.
No.
You know what I mean? It's not. It's within most of you out there. It's within your lifetime. It's mm-hmm. Maybe you were two when it went down. But for many of us, it was in our lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember watching it.
Sure.
But
neither do I.
I was alive during it.
Yeah. But I do remember, and I'll tell you this, I'll tell you this story. I remember 4 years later being young enough to know about it. And yeah. I wrote, we had a school assignment to find somebody, a celebrity that you admired, and write them a letter. And really the exercise was the letter writing. They graded the letter writing, but you know, they also encouraged you to send it. I had a teacher that knew how to get a hold of Mike Ruzioni. And because he was a coach at one of the schools in Massachusetts, and he just knew about it, encouraged me to send a letter to Mike Ruzioni, and he sent me an autographed picture, a personalized autographed picture. Nice. That was 4 years later, right? Because I really was caught up in the whole. To me, that's when I started realizing how much I liked the history of sports and larger implications of sports. It was really that when I realized this wasn't just a win. And I was old enough to sort of process what it meant, but I was too young to, I didn't watch it. I didn't know it went down.
Nah.
Yeah. I didn't, you know,
didn't know anything about it.
A few years later, when like Pat LaFontaine and the United States hockey team was getting ready for Sarajevo, I definitely knew about it.
See, I don't remember the winter games there, but I do remember 84 in LA.
Yeah, I do too.
The summer games.
Yep.
And how the main talk was, especially during gymnastics, the gymnastics routine, there was almost like you need to have an asterisk next to Mary Lou Retton's name.
Oh, sure.
Which was like kind of like, no, you don't.
Well, it wasn't just the Soviets, though. It was every Eastern Bloc country.
Yeah.
And it was also some of their allies in other parts of the world that also said, no, we're not coming. I mean, I remember seeing like a list of countries almost every day that said they weren't coming to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, don't take anything away from Mary Lou. That's West Virginia's own, man.
I'm not taking it. Wasn't me that said
that
you
wasn't
need an asterisk. That wasn't me.
That was another great.
I think I secretly had a crush on her.
On Twitter, at Tony D. I think I did, too. On Twitter, at Tony D. Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue along. Later on in the show, Vinny Iyer is going to join us from Sporting News. We'll talk about NFL free agency, especially with some of these quarterback topsy-turviness that's going on in the league. That's coming up on SB Nation AM.
I got this in pocket. Got battle. Gonna use it. Intention. I'm feeling mental.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It's O-Award Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop in today for store-wide savings. Earn double O-Award bonus points on all sale items like wiper blades, motor oil, tools, accessories, and more. Not an O-Awards member yet? Sign up today online or in the store. Take advantage of Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's fast, easy, and free. But hurry, double points are available for a limited time. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Vinny Iyer, Sporting News, joining us in 10 minutes. You said something funny. Most of these guys that cover the NFL are on vacation right now. And yeah, that's true.
They are.
This is really their downtime.
Yep. We have the combine coming up.
The combine's coming up.
Towards the end of the month.
Yep. And then free agency starts in March.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the time for them to go, all right, if we're going to do a vacation, we got to do it now because the NFL's new year, what, second week of March?
Yeah, that's right.
So it starts all over for them.
I find it. Listen, I know the Tom Brady story is going to be big. We're going to talk to Vinny about that. We're going to bring that up. Like, what's his gut feeling on that? And I know the problem with that feels different than when Peyton Manning was going through the, okay, I'm done with the Colts. They're going with Andrew Luck. Where am I going? Is I feel like people have Patriot fatigue. So it blends itself into this, which in reality is going to be one of the bigger sports stories of the year if he does go somewhere else.
Well, that's Patriot fatigue. That's what it is right now. Because
that is.
We're just sitting there going, just say where you're going to go.
Yeah, I know.
Don't drag it out. Don't be doing these cryptic clues. And, you know, and we're getting news reports out of Boston. Like, he sold his house. He pulled his kids out of school. Oh, he's touring schools. You know, we just don't want any of that. Just say, hey, I'm going to stay in Boston.
What?
Or I'm leaving Boston. And then we can move on.
The ball is in his court, right?
It totally is.
He has enough money that if he wants to play at a lesser salary just to get out of there, he can.
He
right?
can play for the league minimum.
He can.
He still is living a better life than 90% of the NFL.
So in that regards, I get it. Like, but why don't you just say I'm leaving? Like, why can't he just say, look, guys, I don't even care what Robert Kraft throws at me. I want to go play somewhere else. I just want to. Or is he cautious about if he says that, he's rejecting New England before he's accepting something else.
Now, is his,
does that make sense?
Yeah, but I got a question. Is his contract different than others in the sense that, like, Phillip Rivers has officially become a free agent?
Right.
Tom Brady hasn't.
No, he has not. Right.
So I'm curious, like, why was Phillip Rivers and a bunch of other players
did they
hit free agency at that time?
Rivers is technically not officially a free agent until March, but we know that both sides are parting ways. So the difference is that the Chargers have officially said, we're not interested. We are not going to be pursuing him when the free agency period starts.
So do us a solid, Patriots, and say just come out and say, we're going to pursue him. We're not going to pursue him.
Well, that's what I think.
There's
Robert Kraft.
Cloak and dagger stuff.
I think Robert Kraft is doing that by saying he's hoping that he does it. I think this is more of a Brady thing. Brady can come out and say, look, when free agent period begins, I'm not going to sign with the Patriots, but I'm looking for somewhere else. But I think he has to be careful because it's one thing to say, look, I loved my time in New England, but I've always wanted to play for the Chargers, or I've always wanted to play in Los Angeles, or I've always wanted to play in California, whatever that is. Then while it doesn't ease the blow, it public relation wise, it is better than saying, I don't care what my future holds. I just need to make sure it's not with you. Right? It's like if you were getting a divorce and you went, I don't even care if I'm single. I just don't want to be in this anymore.
Do you think
that's different than I love you, but I fell in love with somebody else?
Do you think Tom Brady's enjoying this?
He's totally enjoying this.
It's almost like a narcissistic attitude, right?
Very much so. Very much so. I think he's totally enjoying it. I think he likes the cryptic clues, and he's been throwing little ones throughout enough for the media to feast on it. I think he sits back and laughs. I wonder how many are true, how many are accurate. I got to be honest with you. I think him and Giselle probably laughed their tail off when the media thought that they were in Nashville looking for a private school for their kids. When that whole story went down, and they're like, we weren't even in the city. They mistaken her for somebody else. He's probably laughing his tail off about the amount the media is drooling over any droplet of Brady free agency destinations that's out there, right? I mean, it's got to make them kind of excited. I mean, I would. It'd be kind of neat to see the media kind of fall all over themselves. But this is also what makes it difficult, though, for media members. And I know I've told this story, but I always have to preface that because it's important. Living in Nashville, I had gotten here maybe like 2 years before the Manning deal went down. Right. And Tennessee was in line to get Peyton Manning. And it seemed like all the stars were lining up. He's obviously a football god here. His wife was from Chattanooga. He knew the AFC South playing with Indianapolis. Bud Adams, the owner at the time, promised him a job for life. You could go right to the front office. I mean, you could run the team. I mean, anything you want, just play here. So it seemed like it was going to line up, and a prominent sports talk show host in town made the proclamation that the Titans had scheduled a press conference for tomorrow at a certain time, and it was going to be announced that Peyton Manning was going to sign with the Titans. And I think everybody went to bed believing that. It made a lot of news. It made a lot of buzz. It started whipping around. That was on the news that this was going down. It wasn't going down. It wasn't. He the next day, he chose the Broncos. And it was a sense of the getting wrong information, but needing any information to satisfy the story and to satisfy people's desire for it. So somebody from the Titans might have, or the guy could have just made it up. I don't know, but somebody from the Titans may have thought that, reported it as an anonymous source, and it got a leg of its own. But the next day he was a Denver Bronco. I think if you're Jay Glazer, Adam Schefter, any of these other guys that are following this on a daily basis, where you're trying to get any information you can, I would not be surprised come March if there is a mistake that is made by the media as to his destination. Report sources say he'll sign with the Raiders. Oh my goodness. Oh my God. He's staying with the Patriots. Sources say he's signing with the Patriots. Oh my God. He's going to Los Angeles for the Chargers, you know, or Jerry Jones came out of nowhere and swapped him, you know, picked him up to play for the Cowboys. I think there's going to be a mistake because it is, I think those guys are on the edge of their seat to make sure they're not beaten on this, that they're not beaten on this story. It's the biggest NFL free agent story of this year or a lot of years, probably since Manning had to go someplace else. I mean, this is a six-time Super Bowl champion that still has something left in the tank and could change your football team's image the second he signs. If you're the Chargers and you've got nothing watching Phillip Rivers walk, and you need, he makes you relevant. He makes the Raiders relevant. He's going to make a big splash.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. This is Blondie 1980 as we go Throwback Thursday, the start of the Lake Placid Winter Games 40 years ago. Vinny Iyer joins us from Sporting News to talk about NFL free agency. How are you, my friend?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Vinny, let's get to the Tom Brady stuff. Is this difficult to cover because he sends, like, cryptic things? Or are you just kind of waiting back and seeing where the real evidence is as to his landing spot?
Well, I think it's more fun than anything else because you don't often get a chance to see a player of this caliber or this just all-out power and veteran accomplishments to be out there in free agency, and that's what you're seeing here with Tom Brady. So it's fun. He has a good time on social media, giving us little hints, playing around with us. But I just want to see where this goes because it's gotten really deep. When it gets to talking about Tom Brady on the Cowboys or Tom Brady on the 49ers, that's where you're jumping the shark here. I think if a team has an established quarterback situation, they're going to resolve it. Let's not go there with Tom Brady. But that doesn't say there's about 6 to 7 teams that would be very interested if he's out there.
Yeah, let's talk about the Patriots. I mean, you hear about Robert Kraft, and he keeps saying he hopes that he'll re-sign. But what do you think about Belichick? What is the cap numbers say? What does he feel about a 42-year-old quarterback? How do you think Belichick is viewing this?
Well, I think there's definitely two major egos at play. And we know from what we've heard out of New England, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are not always on the same page with certain things. And they also are very prideful guys that are very historic-minded, where they know they've done a lot. I know they're not much for nostalgia, but that is more with each other, that they don't need to be sentimental and keep doing this thing together and finish it out together. So I think both of those guys realize that. Maybe Bill Belichick has his eye on somebody else who can help. Were other teams looking for an upgraded quarterback or just wanted that stable presence provide that with better supporting cast all around?
Another quarterback that is going to be hitting free agency is Phillip Rivers, and we know he will not be playing for the Chargers. We know he moved his family to Florida. Do you take any indication on that move to that particular state that the possible landing site is Tampa, or could it be a number of other places?
Well, you look at Tampa, and I look at what Bruce Arians said at the end. I mean, his biggest frustration with Jameis Winston was turning over the ball. Like, I feel like he thinks they could have won a lot more games if they simply protected the ball. And what did Phillip Rivers do in the AFC? I mean, he had 20 interceptions.
He was
pretty bad and cost the Chargers a lot of games. When you look at some of the way their early starts were, they were because of interceptions by Phillip Rivers. So does Bruce Arians want to attach himself to another same-style quarterback that's going to take chances, be reckless with the ball? Or does he want someone like Tom Brady, who may not make the big plays, but he's going to be protecting of the ball. He's going to play off his defense. We know that he can still win a lot of games playing smart football. So that's what you have to balance out there. But I look at a team like Washington. I know it's not obvious right now, but I'm not sure how much Ron Rivera and Scott Turner are all in on Dwayne Haskins. He's not the quarterback that was picked in their era. So Phillip Rivers, the best seasons he had was when Ron Rivera was in San Diego with the Chargers as the defensive coordinator with Norv Turner. So when you think about all that, you can usually connect the dots if there's some familiarity or comfort level, and there certainly is that with Rivers and Rivera.
Let's go to Carolina and Cam Newton. What do you think happens with his – now there's a new regime with Matt Rhule, and I know the owner, Dave Tepper, said, well, we got to determine whether or not Cam Newton's healthy, but there's been a feeling like this was it anyway. What do you think happens to Newton?
Yeah, I think for Cam Newton, you also have to consider, do I want to be part of this rebuilding trade?
Sure.
Luke Kuechly's gone. Greg Olsen's gone. Thomas Davis is 2 years removed from your team. Just the familiar guys that you have – went out there and won with and played with are gone. So, I mean, Joe Brady, we know what type of quarterback did well with him. That's Joe Burrow. And we're not sure if Cam Newton is kind of that quarterback and can fit in that system. So you have to get through the health. You got to get through the offensive scheme fit and whether Cam wants to play for a team that's probably not going to be playing for much here in 2020. So when you factor that all in, I think there's going to be a lot of people on the phone calling the Panthers as well. And you look at the Bears, I think that's a great fit because you're not totally sure in Mitchell Trubisky. If Cam Newton's somewhat healthy, you can get him for $19 million and somehow move Trubisky, I think you can go in that direction.
What's your feeling on Drew Brees when it comes to retirement? And that also would be a trickle-down effect into Taysom Hill, and also Teddy Bridgewater is a free agent as well.
Yeah, I think right now I would lean toward him coming back, but I think it's a pretty big percentage that he could walk away. I'm saying like maybe 30 to 40%.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming necessarily this offseason because I think you want another shot here. The Super Bowl window's closing. They've got three chances that didn't work out there in New Orleans, so maybe one more shot. But you look at that, I mean, there's no way they can afford Teddy Bridgewater to be a straight-up backup. If he leaves, that's a tougher decision there. Do they want Teddy Bridgewater to start? Do they want to explore one of these other options? Do they really believe Taysom Hill is an option here to start in 2020? To me, I think the Taysom Hill noise is more that they're going to probably slap that first-round tender on him as a restricted free agent, hope that someone bites, signs, and takes him away. Because I don't know if they will be too sad there if they got a first-round pick in return for a journeyman undrafted guy that you turn into a nice gadget player. But let's stop short of saying we want to see him throw 30 to 40 times a game.
Vinny Iyer joins us, Sporting News, talking NFL free agency. All right, so Vinny, the Tennessee Titans, and part of their success was Derrick Henry being the focal point of the offense and Ryan Tannehill taking over for Marcus Mariota. Both are going to be free agents. They can franchise one. Do they sign both? Who do they franchise? That seems like an interesting development in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, we also know Mike Vrabel was cut from the Bill Belichick cloth, where he's not going to be sentimental long for a guy like Ryan Tannehill because he had one good second half of the season. He has to also weigh the other factors. So you're signing Tannehill to a long-term deal. He's an older quarterback. This is the only good sample size you've really had from Ryan Tannehill, and everything had to go right. The running game had to help him. You had to work off play action. Can you get another guy that isn't so dependent on the running game to actually succeed at quarterback and use your weapons led by A.J. Brown? So when you look at that, I mean, Derrick Henry has to be the priority because he's the lifeblood of your offense. You know you won't have to pay a fortune for him. You might be paying above market in terms of what running backs are worth, but that's still way less than a mediocre quarterback is going to be worth. So I think you weigh that. If you're Tennessee, I think take care of Henry first, lock him up however you want, and then figure it out. But I definitely would not go anywhere near the franchise tag for Ryan Tannehill. And I might personally just move on and look at all these options. You don't get this many high-quality options where you can re-evaluate quarterback in the veteran sense as much as now. And Ryan Tannehill, when you look at the options here, I'd rather go somewhere else.
We're talking about free agency. This is going to be a little off the board because it's not really that. But Dak Prescott in the negotiation with the Cowboys, there's a lot of money going back and forth. And I know that can be a negotiating ploy in the public. But why hasn't this gotten done? Where has been the breakdown?
Well, I think one factor that we should consider is the Patrick Mahomes situation. Because does Dak Prescott want to get locked into something right now? Or is the franchise tag not a bad option for him?
Great
given
point.
That it's going to get you $33 million, and then you can see what Patrick Mahomes gets, and then it kind of has that as a placeholder for July, and then say, okay, this is what Patrick Mahomes got, this is what Russell Wilson got, this is what Carson Wentz and Jared Goff got, so let me slot somewhere in the middle of all these guys with the guaranteed money. We have some parameters to work with now that are reasonable. So I think Mahomes is seen as the ceiling, and with a good reason, at that quarterback spot to be the highest paid player, but I think in the end, Dak is going to want to fall in between Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes.
With all the names that are out there as possible landing spots, and we get these every year, do you look at this as one of the more exciting free agent periods in the last couple of years, about the same, maybe a little less exciting? I know Brady kind of is the outlier in all this. How do you grade what you're about to have in the next couple of weeks as this gets heated up?
Yeah, if you go outside, I mean, there's some intriguing pieces like Amari Cooper and Chris Jones and seeing what's going to happen with them. But quickly, it then gets to the middle tier guys like a Breshad Perriman or Robbie Anderson or even Melvin Gordon at this point, who is just about above average as a running back. So it's really all about the quarterbacks. We know this league is driven by quarterbacks. Teams are trying to find the best possible solution. You never know where it's going to come. You could have a high-ceiling guy like Patrick Mahomes, a high-floor guy like Ryan Tannehill, and you could have a lot of success. So it's going to be fun. And I think what's going to be most interesting is when the musical chairs stop, I think there's going to be more than a couple of surprising names that may not have a kind of places to sit when it's done. So when you throw all these guys, the free agents that we talked about, and Cam Newton and Andy Dalton possibly in this mix, or Derek Carr if someone takes the Raiders spot, I mean, it's going to be wild to watch. And again, there's only a limited number of starting quarterback spots available this offseason.
It's interesting because we don't see a lot of movement from the quarterbacks. Usually, you know, lock up your star for until pretty much they leave the NFL. And now you're talking about big names possibly landing. Phillip Rivers could be somewhere else. Tom Brady could be somewhere else. You know, if Drew Brees stays, that could, you know, that could set another chain reaction. It's I don't feel like it's been this volatile in a long time.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's really an intersection of those older quarterbacks like
right.
Tom Brady or Phillip Rivers. And you don't get such disappointments with your early round draft picks. So you have that in Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, where you look around, the guys right after them have been already locked up, and Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, same draft positions as those two guys. So you have these young guys that were disappointments all around. You have Ryan Tannehill kind of in the middle of that. You have Teddy Bridgewater as a bit of a wild card, and then Brady and Rivers and it's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens. But Dalton, Newton, again, same draft class as well if you go back to 2011. So they're kind of in that limbo as well as veterans trying to figure out what they're going to do.
I'm interested in this, Vinny, and from your perspective watching this league and watching that quarterback position grow, because we just saw this in the Super Bowl, and we just saw this with two quarterbacks that, you know, didn't come in with a lot of fanfare. In fact, Patrick Mahomes, people graded it as a C. People didn't really know what the Chiefs were doing when they finally gave him the reins and got rid of Alex Smith, a guy that was getting him into the playoffs and just couldn't get him to the finish line. Then you're giving it to this young guy that could set you back. There are guys who come into this league as first round pick, second pick overall. They can't make it. They just can't do it. All the evaluation, all of the, he's going to be a surefire winner, can't do it. And then there are guys that come out of nowhere and they're successful. What is your feeling on that in terms of some guys just do it and some guys just can't? And there's no science behind any of this.
No, I mean, there's a little bit of a baseline and you have to decide, what do you want to do? I mean, the Chiefs came up to a decision. They said, do we like this very nice high floor we have with Alex Smith, or do we just want to shoot for the ceiling here? And we think this Patrick Mahomes guy has a big arm, is a pretty good athlete. He could maybe be really special and maybe take us to the top of the heap. And they took that chance. It's hard to do when you have an established quarterback situation. But the worst thing, it's kind of like the NBA, being in the middle class. It's pretty bad to be a middle-class team because you never get those high draft picks.
Right.
You never compete for championships. It's the same thing. If you've got your middle class at quarterback, you're never going to get the high picks. You're never going to compete for championships. So you just have to take that leap of faith sometimes. And if you like a certain makeup of a guy and you know have a good coaching staff to maximize them, then go for it. I think the biggest thing now with these salaries and how they're so unbalanced versus rookies and the veterans and the contracts you get for mediocre veterans versus very talented rookies, got to keep taking your shot. If you're not comfortable with that guy, it's okay. Just go back in, kind of like the Cardinals did. Josh Rosen, new coaching staff, Kyler Murray, they said, all right, let's just go in a different direction. You didn't really phase them at all. And sometimes you have to do that until you find your right guy.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. That you don't you're not locked into a guy where he's stuck. You're stuck with him and he's stuck with you for a while. So you better figure out making it work. You can jettison a guy and you can find a guy where you build the offense. Look, you know, Lamar Jackson is another example of that. Nobody was running to grab him early in that draft. The Baltimore Ravens said, sure, let's go trade in and get him. And now he's the MVP.
Yeah, you just have to keep your eyes, ears, and minds open about these quarterbacks.
Because, good point.
Especially now because the running quarterback, I mean, you look at the success around the league, having that element is so huge right now. And that's why I think if Cam Newton checks out and is fully healthy, he's going to fit in a lot more offenses than some of these other guys who are pretty much pocket passers that you're not going to get too much out of that element. So that's a big asset in Cam Newton's favor if he, again, he can prove he's healthy going forward.
Vinny, always good talking to you, my friend. Good catching up. I know it's going to be getting very busy for you, but we always appreciate your time.
All right, thanks a lot.
You got it. Vinny Iyer, Sporting News, talking some NFL as we continue along on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1980. Boy, I didn't know this was a 1980 song. I would have guessed like 85, 84.
Nope.
That's 80. Awesome. I love when you do this. I love when you give me these pleasant surprises during Throwback Thursday.
Well, this is that earwormy song. But it's a good feel-good.
It's a good song, yeah.
If you're walking around singing this later on today, you know, just go ahead and sing it.
This hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I posted on Facebook yesterday, I don't care what y'all say, St. Elmo's Fire is a good song.
Okay.
I don't know why. I heard that in a movie, and I just was reminded, oh yeah, the Brat Pack. When I listened to it, I then went on YouTube to hear the full song because I only heard a clip of it in the movie. I went, oh yeah, you know what? That's a good tune. That reminds me of school. Like, that reminds me of growing up in the 80s. That was probably
So what movie was it in?
God, I can't remember. Oh, Into the Spider-Verse.
Really?
Yeah, there's a clip in there where it's in there. That movie had what? Who was the Brat Pack? Emilio Estevez, Rob Lowe, Demi Moore. Who's the other guy? Judd, what's the guy's name?
Judd Nelson.
And like Andy McCarthy or someone like that.
Robert Downey Jr.?
Robert Downey Jr. Well, he was, He might have been. So, well, 1980, Lake Placid, Olympic Games started on this date. We had a good time with that today. That was really fun. Really, really fun. SB Nation AM continuing along again on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver. That's Ron with two N's on a Throwback Thursday.